Creekside with Don and Jan. Welcome to Creekside with Don and Jan. If you care to live in harmony with nature and the land, and you wish to live more peacefully with all your fellow man, if self-reliant living is a big part of your plan, if you like to talk some politics with those who really can, this is the time, this is the place, Creekside with Don and Jan. Sit right down and make some space, Creekside with Don and Jan. Let's get started right away, Creekside with Don and Jan. No more singing, no delay, Creekside with Don and Jan. Creekside with Don and Jan.
Oh, howdy and welcome to another episode of Creekside with Don and Jan. Hi, I'm Don Stover.
And I'm Jan Stover, and this is July 14th, episode 337 of Creekside with Don and Jan, the official podcast of the Owl Creek Gazette and Creekside Community Brew.
Rock and roll.
I said that all in one breath, I do believe.
And we were sitting before we started the show, this is episode 337. Wow, how you do 337 episodes? Never stop, never miss a break.
You just keep on keeping on, Don. That's how we do that.
And I know it's not a milestone because there are other people out there that do it, you know, as much as, you know, they got 500 episodes, but 600 episodes. The thing that we're doing, though, is every week consistently. And mm-hmm. that's what makes it, you know, so.
Well, and we have day jobs, too. Several.
Is that what that is?
Day jobs and night jobs.
Well, it's fun. Either way.
It is. We enjoy it. So,
what do they say about that? Whenever your job is fun, you never work a day in your life?
Uh-huh.
I'll take that.
I'll take that, too. So, anyway, we have a special guest with us tonight. Her name is Linda Dust, and Linda has been with us in several capacities as a storyteller, so we're glad to have her on Creekside with Don and Jan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, Linda, how are you? Linda is a wife, a mother, a storyteller, a singer, a story, everything.
Don't forget great-grandmother.
And great-grandmother, too. Crying out loud. Well, and but you enjoy mayor- telling. You enjoy telling folks, folk stories from all walks of life, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got the mayor of Assumption, Illinois, is in your family. I think you're married to him.
That would be my husband, yeah.
So that's one of the later things you add to your list of accomplishments.
We're still waiting. The jury's out on that.
Okay.
Well,
because it was a relatively recent election,
yes.
Wasn't it?
Well,
so
that's cool.
We wanted to share with our listeners how you got into storytelling and also the art of it, because it's different than just passing on information. There's really an art, and I think you'd said before we went on air, it doesn't get as much mention as it really deserves.
Right. And people are unaware that there are festivals all over this country, with the biggest of all, the National Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee, every October. And if you want to have about a week of the most amazing times, go up there, camp at the campgrounds, and go see the different storytellers. I've been lucky to be friends with some of the ones that are in the Circle of Excellence. And, in fact, my mentor in storytelling, Dan Ketting, is in the Circle of Excellence at the National Storytelling. So.
Wow.
Very cool. Well, how did you get started in this?
I have a good friend named Mike Anderson. It's all his fault. For good or bad, it's Mike's fault.
We're giving him credit where credit's due. We just don't know if it's good or bad, huh?
Exactly.
Okay.
Mike had been selling dulcimers at a place called, it's out in Pleasant Plains. It was an old stagecoach stop that they had rehabbed, and he was running a festival there, and he would sell his dulcimers, so he learned to play them, and he's just an incomparable dulcimer player. And I had run into him a few years after the festival had stopped. I said, "Are you still doing that at Clayville?" He said, "No, I'm running a storytelling festival in New Salem, and I think you should come. I think you'd really enjoy it." Started out as a fan. I took my son because it was the youngest one, and I thought he's not going to want to hang with mom much longer.
Getting so while the getting's good.
We
huh?
went, we camped out, and my husband said, "Are you sure?" His idea of camping is a Holiday Inn. But we went, and I loved it. And so I went every year. I took my granddaughter one time, took a grandson with me one time. And you know how sometimes this little voice in the back of your head said, "Hey, you could do that." And I'm mm-hmm. like, "Shut up."
So you talk back to those voices.
Yes,
huh?
I do, especially when it's scary. So a friend of mine had told me one time that there's no such thing as coincidences, mm-hmm. and that very year they had their first open stage at the Storytelling Festival. I'm like, oh, man.
This was meant to be.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to do that. And that was in 2000, 1999 or 2000. Mm-hmm. So I prepared a story, and I got on stage, and it was about the Woody Guthrie song, Reno Blues or the Philadelphia Lawyer. So I told the story behind it and played the song. Had the song pitched in the wrong key, but other than that, I forgot to bring a capo. Only know it in G. So,
well, you just play it in G higher up.
But
that,
I
right?
didn't lose the pick in the audience or down the hole of the guitar, so I thought, you know, that's not too bad. That night, Dan Ketting says, I think you should join the Champaign-Urbana Storytelling Guild. I said, how do I do that? He said, there's Kim. She's our secretary. Give her your stuff. And I did that. And right at 2 years later, I did my first paid gig.
Cool.
And we'll say the rest is history, which you're here to talk about.
That's right.
So I know that, well, we met you, I think, initially through the Clarks at the Clark Farm. That was one of the times that we saw you probably on their cabin stage
right.
for the first time. And that was always a nice gathering of folks that were musicians and storytellers and artists of all kinds.
Right.
So it's a good group of people wherever you go. I imagine you learn and share stories those storytellers, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Clark's Farm has always been a place, really a special place for me, because I've known Steve for a really long time. And mm-hmm. The farm is somewhere where I would go to hang out when things were just crazy. So, mm-hmm. I'm running away from home, bye.
A very peaceful place.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It really is. So, and Leanna has been such a good friend and so supportive. Steve always has been, but I've only known Leanna since she and Steve got together. Mm-hmm. So,
well, they've written for the magazine, and you have written for the magazine, too. It just made me think, when you're talking about camping, you did a wonderful article and told your camping story, and you had your tent set up, and that was really fun. Listeners and readers may remember that, too. So tell us a little bit about your camping trips. Do those help find stories for you?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes nature is wonderful. Sometimes somebody in my family does something stupid.
And that trumps nature, huh?
Yeah, I've warned them. Do something stupid, you're going to be in a story. And I had the great fortune of telling a story on the stage at the Bitter End in Greenwich Village, New York.
Oh, wow.
And it had to be a personal story, because mm-hmm. they're afraid of copyright infringement. Mm-hmm. And it was about something my husband had done, and it was pretty dumb, but it went over well.
Do you want to share that here?
Sure, I've told it so many times. First of all, you got to realize he's a bass fisherman, and that's a special kind of athlete. He calls it athletic, I think. But bass fishermen don't bring food home, although people will horrify him with, oh, I have a great recipe for bass. No, we don't take them home. But they go out, catch the fish, weigh them, turn them loose, wait till they get bigger, catch them again, weigh them, and turn them loose, you know, lather, rinse, repeat. The biggest thing, the most important thing to a bass fisherman is his boat. And each one has their own image of that ideal boat. With Don, it was the Ranger boat. And he had just about saved up enough money for a down payment and got his ducks all in a row to buy a Ranger, the boat of his dreams. And I said, I'm pregnant. I didn't think it funny that some of his friends in the bass club called my son Ranger when he was born, but they seemed to find it amusing. So finally, get it all together, and he's got it. It's 7 years down the road. And so he comes to me, showing me this catalog. What color do you think I should get? Don't care. It's your boat. Make yourself happy. And he wander away. What do you think of this? Don't care. Your boat. Happy. Bye. He finally got the hint that I didn't care. I wasn't going to write in. I don't fish. It's fine.
His boat.
Yeah. You make yourself happy. But then he came to me one night and he says, I know you don't care, but I have to ask you this because it's the finances. He says, how big a motor should I get? I said, you get the biggest motor you can afford, because I do not want to hear next year if I had 5 more horsepower. Okay, fine. So he gets the order together, sends it off, and sits back to wait the 2.5 months till it comes in. And he's so optimistic, he takes to take receipt of the boat the night before he leaves for Texas for his annual fishing trip. So I come home from work, and there he is, about this far outside the garage, and doing stuff around the new boat. I said, well, honey, why don't you put the boat all the way into the garage? You'll see better. It is all the way. Excuse me. He says, you remember when I asked you about the size of the motor? Yeah. Well, that motor weighed a little more, and so they needed to put it on a double axle trailer, which I had not taken into account. So, being the kind and loving wife I am, I went and got my camera and took a picture of it and sent it to a friend that was recovering from hip surgery. I said, Keith, measure twice, order once. So the day, you know, days go on. He took it to Texas. He came back with a list of things that needed fixing, of course, because he was an inspector at Caterpillar, so he is very precise, and I felt kind of sorry for the boat guys. So it was gone, then it was back. Then I come home one night, and the door's closed. I said, well, where's the boat? He said, it's in the garage. How? He said, go around back. You know how you get that sinking feeling in your stomach? Yes. And it got bigger with every step till I got to the back corner of the garage and just kind of leaned my head around. Oh, no. I did it again to make sure I hadn't seen something wrong, and nope. Where there had been a window that morning, there was a doorway now through which protruded a boat motor. People were driving down the alley and pointing. So he came up behind me and put his hands on my shoulders. He said, just think of it this way, honey. We've got the only garage in town that can get on plane. He said, I'm going to box it in, I promise. That was in 2000.
It's not boxed
in yet. People still drive down my alley to point the outboard motor on the garage. But like funny. I said, I knew he was a bass fisherman when I married him, and I married him anyway. So.
He proves it day in and day
exactly.
out, doesn't he?
But I'm okay with that.
Well, that's good. Well, and we did say we want to talk about the art of storytelling. So after we leave your husband and his boat, and before we get into some of the other aspects of storytelling that you've done personally, why don't you tell us a little bit about how the art evolved?
Well, the storytelling itself dates far back as spoken words. Mm-hmm. When the first person described the hunt, mm-hmm. that was a story. When he described how he lost his hand because he got too close to whatever critter he was hunting, that was the first form of education. Mm-hmm. You know, other than self-education by trial and error, it was the first time somebody listened to what happened, it didn't do that. And so it dates back farther than anything. Possibly music is farther, because I'm sure that came along at the same time or earlier. But it became the way communication, the newspaper, the radio, whatever, because storytellers would go from town to town bringing with them whatever ballad or story that was happening so that the other people in wherever could be informed. So it's been around just that way for a long time. And then, of course, we've developed new ways of storytelling. Books was the first big jump, but not everybody could read. So storytellers were still really important. And then we got radio. Mm-hmm. But not everybody had one of those either.
But the shadow do.
And the shadow knows.
My grandfather actually had the first radio, great-grandfather, first radio in Christian County. It was run by 4 car-sized batteries, and people would come to his house on Sunday night to listen to whatever political thing was going on.
Oh, how fun.
This is a story I'm told. I was not around to witness it. But anyway, and then we had TV and movies, but still, storytelling, the art of being one-on-one or with an audience and nothing between them other than maybe a microphone, it's more intimate. And it's still a valid way of education or entertainment. I do not know his name. There was a man some 50 or so years ago, 50, 60 years ago, that single-handedly kind of revived or established storytelling as an art. And there were a lot of people that were doing storytelling, just not labeling as that. Mm-hmm. Andy Griffith in his albums, What It Was Football, is the most wonderful story that'll have you rolling on the floor laughing. But some stories, I've seen storytellers that can make you cry at the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. You've been laughing one time and then, and Donald Davis is an amazing, amazing dude for that, for personal stories. But he also is an expert on Jack tales, which we're all familiar with, Jack and the Beanstalk, Jack the Giant Killer. Well, there's hundreds of those stories. They came from England, probably 500 or so years ago.
And they're called Jack Tales.
Jack Tales.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Because Jack's the hero.
Exactly. I hadn't thought of it like that. That's neat.
So, you know, a lot of us are familiar with stories that we don't even realize we're familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You know, what's a two-minute upbeat story? It's a joke.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of jokes. There are a lot of funny stories that are, you know, Bill Lepp is one of the funniest comedian or storytellers you'll ever hear.
Well, I was just thinking about the comedians that get up and do like an HBO special or something like that. They do tell stories.
Yes,
and
they
weave the jokes into the stories.
Exactly.
And a lot of times they end with what they started with, and they've walked you through an hour and a half of their journey. So
right.
It's neat.
Horse walks into a bar, bartender says,
Why the long face?
Shortest story on the planet.
Yeah. We have one of those things you talk to, Google Home.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my husband asks it every day, okay, Google, tell me a joke. They are horrible jokes.
Oh, they are.
We've done that, too. Yeah. In fact, we want to mention here, you can, if you've got a Google Home Mini or anything like that, you can say, hey, Google, play me the latest episode of Creekside with Don and Jan, and it will do it. And we think that's hysterical and wonderful all at the same time to hear our, you know, our guests and ourselves on there.
I'm surprised your phone didn't go off. Just
I know.
Oh, yeah, mine.
The phone is always listening.
But we do that same thing, and we say, tell us a joke. Or we ask questions, and it will ask us questions back and then write a poem for us.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yes.
You just ask it, hey, Google, do you love me?
Oh. How about, hey, Google, do you know Siri?
And our phones are talking, folks, behind the scenes.
There she was. We'll just put the park on that.
So we were talking about 50 years ago, you said there was a gentleman that kind of began to push that into the arena.
Of entertainment, mm-hmm. and folk ballads. And that was what drew me to storytelling, when I saw people going up on stage telling a story and singing a folk song. I grew up on Pete Seeger.
Sure, yeah.
And all of those, Peter, Paul, and Mary, mm-hmm. the Limelighters, Christina, Christie Minstrels, all of those, mm-hmm. that was the stuff I heard as a preteen and teenager.
Right,
so
Kingston Trio.
Yes, I've seen the Kingston Trio.
Oh, cool. They're,
okay, now, I mean, this edition, there's only one of the original ones.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've seen Peter, Paul, and Mary while Mary was still alive.
Oh,
and it was,
you're killing me.
Probably the single best concert I've ever been to.
Oh,
and I've
I
been
bet.
To a lot of concerts.
Oh, I would.
So
that's good.
It was on her 60th birthday, so the whole audience sang happy birthday to her.
Oh, cool.
What a nice memory to be able to share
it
with
is.
How many thousands of people were there. Was it an intimate setting?
It was
at
University of Illinois Springfield.
Oh.
So it wasn't huge, but it wasn't real tiny.
Mm-hmm.
But
gosh, I remember wanting tickets for that and didn't go. Oh, man.
Wow. So
you and I were married. We could have gone to see Peter, Paul, and Mary at University of Illinois Springfield.
I don't know why we didn't. Silly us. Well, we'll just appreciate your telling of the story to us. And speaking of ballads, we had said, would you like to do a sing a little ballad here for us? And if you've got that in you, I think our listeners would appreciate that too. She raises her eyebrows, folks.
I will warn you, there is death. But this is an Appalachian ballad, and they came over from Scotland. And Ireland mostly. And if you've ever heard an Irish ballad, there isn't one that ends well.
That's where the death comes from.
Exactly. Okay. Come in, my own true love, and spend this night with me, for I've got a bed, it's a very fine bed, and I'll give it up for thee, I'll give it up for thee. It's I won't come in or I'm not coming in to spend this night with thee. For I've got a wife in the old Scotland. This night she waits for me. Me, this night she waits for me. It she pulled out her little penknife. It a being both keen and sharp. And she stepped up to her own true love and stabbed him through his heart. Heart, she stabbed him through his heart. Woe be, Lady Margaret, he cried. Woe be, it's unto thee. For there weren't no wife in the old Scotland that I loved any better than thee. Thee that I loved any better than thee. Lay there, my own true love. 1 hour or two or three, and I will send to a doctor, dear, to save the life of thee. Thee to save the life of thee. It's I won't live nor I can't live from the wound you've given me. No doctor's hand, just God's own hand could save my life for me. Me could save my life for me. It she cried out to the serving girl, this thing I'll promise thee. If you'll help me on this dark night, my gown I'll give to thee. Thee, my gown I'll give to thee. It she took hold of his long yeller hair, and the other took up his feet. They throwed him into the old dry well, which was so cold and deep, deep, which was so cold and deep. Lay there, my own false love, till the flesh falls off in your frame, and your little old wife in the old Scotland shall mourn for your return, turn shall mourn for your return.
Neat.
Cool.
This is a private moment here that we were able to share with all our listeners. So
no kidding. I started tapping on purpose.
you were getting into it, weren't you, Don?
I learned that from an album, but I also know the woman in person, a woman named Sheila Kay Adams, who was an NEA award winner for being a seventh generation storyteller and ballad singer.
Oh, neat.
She grew up in a little town called Sodom, North Carolina. And Gomorrah was nowhere around her. She points that out. And her stories will just about flip you out. She's just one of the funniest women I've ever met. But she's an expert on the child ballads. Mm-hmm. In fact, when she went to college, she was playing some of the songs. So her granny had taught her, knee to knee, just repeat, you know, by rote. And they said, oh, that was great. Do you know any other child ballads? She says, well, you know, granny's love songs are a little rough. I don't know. I'd play them for children. No. Dr. Child, there is a compendium of ballads of all of these. He had documented all of them. And that's what they were talking about. But Cecil Sharp, who had collected all these Appalachian ballads, had actually collected several from her grandmother. And so she has this wealth of knowledge. You say, what song is this theme? Oh, okay, that's child ballad number whatever.
Wow. And she knows it to the...
She's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
And when you speak of Appalachian, it makes me think of Foxfire books,
mm-hmm,
and all the history and storytelling that they recorded.
Right.
Either, you know, by microphone, or they, you know, wrote it down, and that's a wealth of knowledge, mm-hmm, there, too. So.
And even, you know, people that would go through and go into the hills of Appalachia with portable disc...
Old tape recorders, right.
And cutting records on the fly.
Right.
You know, they did that through the 30s and 40s like crazy, trying to preserve that history.
Mm-hmm. The movie Songcatcher,
mm-hmm,
the main character, is doing that.
Yeah.
I think we've seen that.
We've seen song. Yeah.
Yeah. So
if you watch, there's a barn dance scene in the middle of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And then a fight breaks out, because,
mm-hmm,
they must be Irish.
But,
one of the people that really started the fight rolls up to the bandstand, and this woman that's been playing the banjo just gets a grin on her face and just kicks him off. That's Sheila Kay Adams. She was the song consultant, and they stuck her in there.
Uh-huh. I like when they do that from time to time, don't you? In movies, either the writer, the author, somehow connection that's semi-famous gets, mm-hmm, in there, and you go, oh, I caught a glimpse
when
of them.
When I saw it, I went, I didn't know she was in the movie.
Well, if folks want to learn about storytelling, can they contact you? And is an organization? And share that information with us.
I'm a member of the Champaign-Urbana Storytellers Guild. We haven't been real active of late, mostly on their Facebook page. There's different tellers that you can get in contact if you might want to hire one of us. You know, and usually if one can't do it, another will, mm-hmm. which is really a little bit not quite like musicians. They're not storytellers or more. No, you really want this one.
Yeah. they know what you're going for. Yeah.
If somebody wants something real scary, I'll call my friend Kathy from Champaign, Kathy Brinkman. She's a little tiny person with a fairly quiet voice, and she will scare the socks off of anybody.
She would probably be a good person to call for a Halloween event or something like
that. We did a Halloween event together. And I said, Kathy says, well, how do you want to do this? I said, I'm going on first, and you're going to scare the hell out of them.
You just warmed them up.
My stories were very mild. Kathy's not so much.
So how do we get a hold of you?
You can call me at 217-226-3535 or my cell number, 217-454-6206.
Cool.
And you also have a Facebook page, don't
you? Yes, Linda Dust, Singer Storyteller.
Cool.
And I believe you have a website, too.
No, I took the website down.
A lot of people have done that when they find other social media, like either Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or something, that they can connect with people that way. So that's kind of nice.
I've had more success with Facebook than I ever did with mm-hmm. websites.
Mm-hmm. Well, and tonight, when we post this, you will be here at the same time, pretty much, doing a storytelling set from 6:30 to 7 mm-hmm. for us at our Creekside Open Mic Night.
Yeah.
And we're really looking forward to that. It's the first time we've had a storyteller that we've kind of featured.
Uh-huh.
And so, like you said, that's the whole point. An open mic will showcase talent,
exactly,
not just musicians. And so we want to make sure that that's something people can come and participate in. So do you want to close us out with another story?
In Ireland, there was a father who had three sons, and he was dirt poor, as many of the Irish were, and he wanted more for his sons, like we all do as parents. But that would take an education, and he didn't have one. So finally, he thought, this is the only thing I can do. And he made a deal with the devil. I want all of my sons to be educated and do well, you can have my soul. So it happened. The oldest son became a priest. Oh, the village was so proud to have a priest from their own village. The second son was a doctor with renowned skills of diagnosing and curing. The third son was a lawyer. It was a job. So after all three were established in their careers, the old man sickened and the devil came. His son, the priest, was there with him, and he told the devil, he said, I know we don't have the right to ask, but could you give us one more year? We love him so much, and he's made such a sacrifice. Besides, you'll have him for all eternity. Well, the devil didn't be on a little PR, so he said, all right, 1 year. The old man got better. He enjoyed his time with his family, but a year later, again, he was on his sickbed. The devil showed up, and the doctor was with him at that point. He says, now, I've given you a year. And he says, I know, but my wife is pregnant, and I really would like my father to at least hold my child. 6 months, please? All right, you got 6 months. But that's it. All right. And the old man got better. The baby was born. He got to hold him. And the devil showed up. But this time the lawyer was with him. And before he could even open his mouth, the devil said, No. I've given you people enough. No, I wasn't going to ask for much. I just got here and I want to say my goodbyes just till this candle burns to the bottom. That candle. Yes. Till it burns all the way out. Yes. And no longer. Yes. And the devil said, all right. And the lawyer picked up the candle and blew it out, stuck it in his pocket. And the moral of that story is, it takes a lawyer to beat the devil.